Honoring our ancestors can be a tricky thing for some of us. Some folks identify ancestors strictly as the familial and biological links to which we are connected through blood and DNA, marriage and adoption. Those who study genealogy dedicate time and energy to finding names and dates for everyone on the family tree. Some folks consider all the wise ones, young and old, who have impacted our lives to be the ancestors. In some cultures, maybe yours, all beings are our ancestors, all that have gone on before us. Some of our ancestors are easy to celebrate. And we also have the opportunity to make peace with the more challenging ones. Anybody have any of those in your family tree? Or in your friend circle? We love them still, and yet. All around the northern hemisphere, as the weather grows colder, much of the harvest is finishing and deciduous trees are dropping their leaves like mad. People for several centuries have created celebrations that honor the cycle of life and death. In the coming week, there is Halloween or All Hallows Eve, the Celtic and/or pagan holiday of Samhain. There's All Saints' Day, followed by All Souls' Day in the Catholic and some other Christian traditions. In this part of the world, we are headed into the darkest time of the year. There's a confluence of different cultures, different religious traditions that commemorate this time of year with festivals honoring those who have died. In some places, especially parts of Mexico, Dia de los Muertos, or Day of the Dead, are celebrated in the cemeteries. The rituals and celebrations of this multiple-day holiday are for making peace with death, recognizing that it is part of the cycle of life. And we know this congregation has some connection to this holiday through your prior minister, Priscilla Richter, and some of her belongings that she has left for the congregation are on the altar. The gravestones are cleared and cleaned. Marigolds and favorite foods and beverages symbolically honor those who have died. Decorated sugar skulls and the creation of skeletons are plentiful. Because reality is that death is as close as our own bones. And life and love are as near as our own heartbeat. As near as our next breath. Life and death connected in this never-ending circle. One of the reasons why people come together in religious communities is to make some sense out of our experiences, to find some meaning in this journey of our lives, or to be with one another when it seems that there is just no sense or meaning in it at all. One of the greatest gifts is when a community can be a container for holding some of our shared memories. That by risking being known by one another, sharing with each other our joys, our hopes, our losses, our fears, and our grief, that we don't have to hold these all on our own. When someone we love dies, we are often overwhelmed with numbness or sorrow that feels bigger than we can bear. Our grief may not be lessened by community, but it may become more bearable. The pain of loss can feel overwhelming. And when grief is large and sharp, or so heavy that it is difficult to breathe, joy can seem impossibly far away. And as we make our way through the grieving process, sometimes it can also be a challenge when bits of happiness return.
In the spring of 2000, my mother passed away. My older sister, Terry, had just met a wonderful man who she would later marry when Mom was diagnosed with cancer just 5 weeks before she died. Several Christmases later, our family gathered at Terry and Dave's new house. It was a beautiful day. After dinner, both of my sisters and I were in the kitchen cleaning up. Terry said, "This was the best Christmas ever." And then she caught herself, feeling joy, and began to cry. How could it be the best Christmas without Mom? And it really had been lovely. There we were, feeling the joy that life can bring, woven with the sorrow of loss. We finished the dinner dishes and set out the dessert that my eldest sister Sue had made, the rich chocolate mayonnaise cake with St. Cecilia sauce that Mom served every year. We learned that it tastes delicious, even when we had been crying. It was at about that time that I wrote a poem called Grief. Even after the intensity changes, grief can surprise us, showing up in unlikely places at times we weren't expecting it. There it is, grief, like a ticket stub in a blazer you haven't worn in a year, and there you are, back in the theater, and you didn't even plan to go. The Reverend Lisa Presley says, grieving is hard, some of the hardest work we do, and too often we find ourselves trying to take a shortcut, aided and abetted by our grief-avoiding culture. Yet we cannot shortcut the process. We cannot deny grief its due, or we'll find ourselves losing wallets, or worse, misplacing our sense of selves.
After the election, this past year has brought with it many opportunities to grieve, hasn't it? There are terrible things that humans are doing to the earth. Grieving for the loss of civility in the public debate of ideas, for the death of the importance of fact, for the profound backsliding on the progress made towards human decency and justice, for people of color and those who are indigenous, for those with disabilities, for people who identify on the LGBTQ spectrum, for healthcare, including care for our veterans and military personnel. And the list goes on and gets longer every single day with this current administration. That's a lot to grieve, exactly. While the world calls us to resist and persist against such ignorance and hatred and greed, we must not just be angry, not just afraid. And we must not just react. We need to make space for grieving and to make time to strategize, to create a response that may alter the outcome. And maybe together we can do it in time. For our spirits to weather this tumultuous, challenging time, we need to tend to them. To heal our broken hearts, we need to take time to express the pain we are feeling. Not wallow there, but take some time to wail, to lament. Our hearts that love so deeply, that can feel so fragile, are really resilient, especially when we make time to use them to feel all that we are feeling. So that when our hearts break, they break open with compassion and joy and empathy and love. We cannot deny grief its due, or we'll find ourselves losing wallets, or worse, misplacing our sense of selves. So many of us in this room, your ministers included, are carrying the weight of grief and loss. And most of us are losing or misplacing things. It might be memory. And memory is so impacted by grief, we need to be gentle with ourselves, more patient with one another. In fact, let's practice that right now, because most of us, I'm guessing, aren't very good at being kind to ourselves. We're good at being kind to other people really well, usually. But maybe in a quiet indoor voice, you might just tell yourself, it's okay for me to experience my sadness and grief. Go ahead. It's okay to experience my sadness and grief. Maybe you can tell yourself that it's okay to pull back for a bit and be present to what I'm feeling. It's okay for me to pull back for a bit and be present to what I'm feeling. And as we make space for our own sense of loss and grief, we need to make space for one another's too. Because we don't want anyone ever to misplace themselves. So maybe you can turn to a neighbor and quietly say, I honor your feelings, whether sadness or joy. I honor your feelings, whether sadness or joy. And maybe you can turn to a different neighbor and say, I honor your process of experiencing your feelings. I honor your process of experiencing your feelings. It's a practice. We may find ourselves forgetting to do that, and we remind ourselves, just like in meditation, when we come back to the breath, when we are distracted, we can remind ourselves to make space for our sadness and grief and to honor one another's feelings too. In order to do this, though, we are going to have to get more comfortable being present to one another's pain. Not trying to rush someone into feeling better. We need to be willing to sit in the silence with someone who is upset at the death of a spouse or parent or friend or furry companion without saying things like they're in a better place now. It seems like it would be helpful, but it is almost always the absolute wrong thing to say. The survivor can say that if it's what they believe, but we better not. Instead, when we're not sure what to say, because so often we don't know what to say, we can try something like, wow, I am so sorry you're going through this. Or, this must be so hard. Is there any way I can support you? Can I bring over a meal or walk the dog or pick up the kids at school or bring some ice cream or just sit here with you? Often our presence is all we need from one another. All we need to give our presence to let someone know that we care about them. A sense of please be with me in my pain so that I know I am not alone. This is one of the deepest gifts of religious community that we can give one another.
From you I receive, to you I give. When you think of those who have died, what parting gifts have you been given? Is it in the shape of your jaw or your sense of humor? Is it in your knowledge of plants and springtime flowers? Is it in your love of words or your connection with animals? Not one of us has come to be who we are completely on our own. We really are part of an interdependent web, which extends over time, reaching back into the past and connecting the cells of our bodies to the air, to the earth, to the oceans. There is a web connecting our thoughts to what we have learned from others and to our experiences. It is like we are part of a giant dot-to-dot picture, a multidimensional image that is too complex and vast for us to see in its totality. In celebration of our ancestors and the amazing strands which connect us, I share a poem by Nancy Schaffer, UU minister and poet who died in 2012. The poem is about the director of religious education in the Davis, California congregation. It's called In the Beginning. Kate is teaching the kids about dinosaur air.
The air that you breathe, the air that you have inside you every time you take a breath, that's dinosaur air, she says. Dinosaurs breathed it. The kids' eyes are very wide. They take deep gulps of air just to have more dinosaur air inside them. The air we have is all the air we will ever have, Kate says. So we have to take good care of it. The kids gulp less. Consider the air already inside. Kate tells more. Actually, she says, we're all cousins. The kids look at each other, disbelieving, believing. You? We, all of us, Kate says, way, way back began as cousins, way back in the beginning. The kids whoop, clap each other on the back. For the rest of the day, they savor air and call each other cousin. May we see each person that we meet as the cousin they are. May we hold our own and one another's grief with care. May we hear the breath of the ancestors in the fire, in the wind, in the trees. And may we live so that our lives will be a blessing, offering gifts of kindness, justice, creativity, and compassion to others. Amen, amin, amen, aho, ashe, and blessed be.